Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Dr. Tina Ray. Tina has 40 years' experience working with children, adults and families in clinical and educational context within local authorities and specialist services. She's currently working as a consultant educational and child psychologist in a range of social, emotional, mental health and mainstream context. Tina is a prolific author and has 100 publications to date. These reflect her ongoing passion for developing practical resources for schools which have an evidence base and enable practitioners to ethically deliver effective preventative mental health interventions in school. And today, Tina and I are talking about bereavement. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Tina. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. We were marvelling that it is a nice day today and sun's out, and that can really help mood, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a total cheer up. The moment you get some sun on your body, it's really, really healthy, I think.
It really is. And we're really excited to have you on the podcast, honoured even with your breadth of experience, the books that you've written. Really lucky to have your expertise today. And today we're focusing in and around the idea of supporting children that are coping with bereavement at home. Could you give us a book recommendation on the topic?
I can give you two, actually. I mean, I think in terms of a book which actually goes into the detail around bereavement, grief, loss, you know, clarifying what they are, clarifying how children themselves experience those issues, and the kind of developmental stages, etc. I would recommend the bereavement book, which is from Hinton House Publishers, but also has a range of really practical, user-friendly ideas and activities to support children in talking about grief, in talking about their losses, in managing the emotional aspects, and in thinking about how we remember and celebrate people or things or objects or experiences, things that we've lost in our lives. So, because I think it's really important, this book really focuses on the fact that grief and loss is not just simply about someone we love dying. It can be about a pet, it can be about an animal, it can be about losing a home, losing a livelihood, it can be about moving countries, being a refugee, for example. These are all experiences of loss. So, and I think it's really important to note that they are all grief worthy. So that's one recommendation, because I think it's really, really comprehensive. And that's useful for teachers and parents and carers. And then there is the bereavement box from the charity Nurture UK. Which is a really practical, very, very user-friendly set of 60 laminated cards, which really prompt the adults working with a child to support them effectively in remembering, understanding what death is, for example, what that really means, the finality of it, but also thinking about, you know, complex emotions around loss. So if they've experienced a loss and they feel that they've done the wrong thing, or they feel they hurt someone who's died, they feel guilt about that, it's actually processing all of those feelings and normalizing them for children. So very practical, very user-friendly. So those would be my two main recommendations, which I know are both mine, but, you know, hey,
it happens on the podcast, and I think it's okay to champion the great work, you know, that you do in your expertise. And I was thinking about particularly the bereavement box and the practicality of those cards, and just thinking about experiences I've had in my family with dealing with grief and loss, and how nice it would be to do those kind of practical activities together. So as the adult accessing it that might be dealing with that bereavement as well, to join in with it, and what a sharing experience that could be. So that's kind of how I was thinking about it, as a wonderful, rich resource.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because I think there is something about, you know, as parents, as carers, this notion that, oh, I mustn't share my own feelings of loss. I've got to kind of protect my child somehow. Mm. And I think in a way that can be, it's a tricky area, but it can be really, really detrimental to the process of grieving for the child and for the adult, because the moment you separate those things off, the child gets frightened. because is this really happening? Has this really happened? Are they telling me the truth? And I think there's something about working together and expressing and sharing that grief to the level at which you think is appropriate is really, really healthy, because it's important children know their mum or their dad or their carer is experiencing the grief too, rather than hiding it from each other, because it gives each other permission to then grieve together and celebrate and remember that individual together. And there's something really quite powerful in that for a child, because it makes them feel secure and safe. And it is about safety, because that emotional safety is what you really need as a child when you're experiencing this kind of loss. So I think it really is a useful set of tools, really.
Yeah, we'll put a link underneath the episode so parents, carers, professionals can access it and have a look through. Tina, tell us a bit about your experience around this topic and your background.
Well, I've worked as a psychologist for over 40 years, just over 40 years. And my main primary area has always been mental health, well-being of children, young people. So beginning as a teacher many, many years ago, and then working as a psychologist subsequent to that. So for me, I think it's one of those areas that has never, ever been addressed appropriately in the curriculum. I mean, they attempted to do it in the SEAL curriculum many moons ago.
Yeah.
But I think it's an area that should actually be on the curriculum, because all of us, children and adults alike, will experience some level of grief and loss at some point in our lives. So, and I've always been very, very interested in how children experience emotional trauma, physical trauma, and what the results of that are for them longer term. Because for example, in my first job as a psychologist, I worked in what was then an EBD school. We now call it social, emotional, mental health difficulties. And what was interesting were a number of children who had lost significant carers or parents, grandparents usually, in their early years, and had not had any support whatsoever. And out of 66 children in this special school, it was something like 79% of those children had not had any support. I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was around about 79-80%. And that really impacted, I think, on them in terms of their ability, their capacity to move on, to process that grief, to really understand what had happened. And I think also keeping that kind of set of feelings inside you and not actually being able to process, acknowledge all the fear and anxiety that they had experienced, I think that made a huge, huge difference to them, because it engenders what I call complex grief, where you can't actually move on, you can't actually work forward and really live with and grow around that pain that you've experienced. So I think that was probably one of the first times that I became significantly interested in that area. And obviously it's gone on from there.
Yes.
And it's something I've been passionate about, but also really giving people, adults, parents, carers, and teachers and support staff in schools, really use the friendly, practical resources to support the emotional well-being of children, because I think everyone seems to be under much more pressure, and we know why. I mean, it's to do with, you know, last 3 years, it's COVID, it's a pandemic, it's ongoing war in Ukraine and other wars around the world. It's to do with, you know, lack of finances, financial insecurity now. There's so much going on. There are so many different pressures, and the pressures have changed. I mean, things like social media for children and people as well. I think that there's never been more need for resources that people can pick up and use that actually tackle some of these key issues that are so significant for children and young people, and do it in a safe way. Because I think many, many times, more often than not, people shy away from things that they don't really feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And to kind of push it to one side and think, oh, it'll go away, we'll get over this issue, the child will recover. And that's not always the case, because what we tend to do as human beings is we internalize those traumas, those events, and they will return at some point in the future. You know, one of the key things for me is I always find myself saying to parents and carers, please keep the dialogue open, talk to your child, tell the truth, be honest, be authentic, give them the information that they need so that they can fact check things particularly. But it's really, really important. We don't we need to normalize some of this stuff, I think, and actually say it's okay to talk about it, because when we bury it, I think we're storing up lots of problems for the future, really.
And I think by burying our feelings or our ability to talk to a child about the bereavement, it can leave someone feeling really lonely with it, which I think is going to be really, really challenging. I mean, similar to you, I've worked in social, emotional, mental health schools and pupil referral units as well. And I'll never forget, I won't give any details, but an individual losing a loved one. And the change that the setting made in the first 2 weeks were amazing. It was so supported, offering all sorts of counselling. And maybe it was more than 2 weeks, maybe a month. But after that month was up, it's like, right, we've done the bereavement, we've done the loss, right? You're done now. Back to lessons, back to how it was. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, this person's lost someone that is so dear to them. It's not a sort of a month-long process. It's as long as needs. And I think there is sometimes a misconception about the process and how that process works. And I thought that might be a nice way of leading in about the grief cycle and the stages of grief that you mentioned in your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with the stages of grief, and I do mention them in the book, because I think it's important, because that is the model that probably most people will be aware of, you know. And I think that the problem with it is that it's presented in a way as being linear. So you kind of deny it, you go through this process, you're grieving it, you know, and you've got anger that you go through, and eventually supposedly you come to a place of acceptance. And actually, I think our understanding has moved on in the last sort of 15, 20 years. I include it because I think it's important, because that's the kind of current narrative out there for most lay people. But actually, we know that that's not how grief works. It's much, much messier than that. And basically, you know, if we are thinking about the grief process, it's almost, if I was drawing it out, it would be not linear, it would be a scribble going up and down and up and down. Because actually you go through and back, and you kind of go in between those stages. You revert back, you go forward, you revert back. So that's why sometimes, you know, if you've lost someone, when I lost my father, I remember this experience of, you know, driving to a school one day to do a visit to the Prue, actually, and just suddenly finding my face was totally wet. And this was kind of 4 years after he died, because something had triggered. It's a piece of music. It was Annie Lennox on the radio. It was just one of those moments. And I thought, you know, this is grief. It's something that we grow around. Tompkin has a model of grief. We grow around it. It's there. So you put it in a jar, and it's this really, really big ball. It fills the jar, and eventually it gets smaller because the jar is getting bigger. We grow around it. And I think that's really important to understand, because very often people will say, oh, she should have got over that by now. You know, her friend died 3 years ago. No, you will never get over it. You will just get used to living with the pain of it. And you'll get used to going through your normal life and doing the things that you always did, and you'll get better at doing that without kind of constantly reflecting on it. But you'll have these moments where it just seems to sideswipe you. I think, you know, Richard E. Grant does a lot, podcasts and things around this, talking about his wife, and he's so eloquent about it, and the fact that, you know, people need to understand that grief is not linear, and that it doesn't just go away suddenly after 2 years, which is what most people seem to think. It goes on for the rest of your life. It's just you work around it. You grow around it differently. And I think sometimes as well, I've heard people say, oh, well, she should have coped by now. She's clearly not resilient enough. And again, I think that's wrong. It's like anything to do with our mental health well-being. We're different. We have to treat people as unique human beings.
Yeah.
And someone may take longer. It doesn't mean that they're weak or they're a failure in any sense in terms of managing their emotions. It just means, you know, the bigger the loss, the bigger the grief, I think.
Yeah. And It's so interesting because, I mean, I'm not hugely up on this topic. It's definitely not my area of expertise, but I just, you know, that linear kind of stages of grief, it's so out there, isn't it, in the ethics. I was like, right, even I know these, and I, you know, yeah, haven't necessarily used it in practice. But I do remember my partner actually talking about those stages of grief when she lost her dad when she was, I think, 17. And I think she took it so linear and so literally that she got frustrated with that model, because she was like, well, I need to get past, you know, this part, and then I can move on to the next. And I really like the visual of the kind of scribbling up and down, or something circular, isn't it, going back?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know, you know, I, for me personally, the anger is something that is still there, you know. I can experience that, and my dad died in 2004 and I'm just still angry about it, and that's fine. You know, I think the moment we try and say we have to conform to that model, then that doesn't give us permission to continue the grief journey. And the grief journey for many of us does last a lifetime.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it does get easier in the sense that we learn how to understand that this is just something that's going to happen for a bit, and then I'll carry on with my life again, you know. And you know, I've talked to kids who've said to me, oh, I feel really guilty, I haven't thought about daddy at all this week. And you think, that's okay, that's absolutely fine, you know. You'll probably think about him next week, you might think about him later on, but that's fine, you know. It doesn't make you a bad person, it just means that you're getting on with your life, and actually that's probably what your dad would have wanted. So you know, it's very different.
It is really different. And I thinking about, I mean, you mentioned there around maybe losing a parent or maybe even a sibling. But I was thinking, lots of children experience grief through losing a pet. I wondered if that was any different, or we approach anything different when we're talking about people, pets, things. Is there any difference, or is it gonna, you're just going to say it's all the same, Claire? That's a silly question.
No, I think that the only difference that I would kind of caveat this with is, because yes, it is the same, the grieving process is the same, whatever you lose, it's, you go through the same experiences. But I do think with something like losing a pet, if you take into account people's religious beliefs, their spirituality, and for some people, you know, animals do not have spirits, etc., etc., so you would have to take that into account when you're talking to a child. But I think you'd have to take their belief system into account anyway, regardless whatever loss that they were experiencing. But no, I mean, I think there's still the need to talk, there's still the need to express those emotions, there's still the need to go through the ceremony of a burial or whatever you want to do, and celebrating, remembering, all of that stuff. Because I think sometimes we diminish children's losses, you know, oh, I lost my comforter, I lost my favourite pet, I lost my favourite toy, I lost my best friend, because she went off and played with someone else and she's not my friend. But actually, they're huge, they are experiences of loss, and they're hugely significant to children. So I don't want to go down the route of over pathologizing them, because I also think that's wrong, because actually grief, loss, this is all a part, normal part of the human experience. But not acknowledging them and thinking that they are as equal to, they are for a child, this is just as significant. So I think it is the same, you do go through the same kind of process. And I also think you need opportunities to talk, to celebrate, to remember, to reflect, and to have people say to you, yeah, this is quite normal. We all miss so-and-so. We all miss, you know, whatever your dog or your cat or your budgie was called.
It is. And I think the danger maybe with something like a pet bereavement when we're supporting children is that it gets diminished the importance of that object. A bit like you were saying, I said objects, I mean animal. A bit like you were talking about the objects of, you know, oh, it's not important.
You've been listening to you know, my
and perhaps even a goldfish.
Thank you for joining
passing.
Us.
It's still on the that experience of losing of something behavior. That you know you
remember
you
to subscribe
care
to
about
to all our episodes.
I think about
and there's heaps more help
lost
support
our family
for all
dog,
your parenting needs
a couple of years ago now.
Website.
And it was so
thanks
important
again,
for me and my nieces and nephews to have a little plaque. We didn't really do a ceremony, but to have a bit of a memorial. And I think there was parts of our family that did want to sweep it under the carpet and not
sort of think about the impact of that loss. And it was really nice to be able to do that. And I felt that, I mean, I probably did it more for me really than my nieces and nephews, but it felt like not closure, because like you say, it's something that you carry on and grow around. But yeah, that felt important, and not to diminish the impact that losing a pet can have on someone.
Yeah. And I mean, I think these rituals are really, really important, you know. And for example, through COVID, that was probably the most significant thing, was that people weren't able to actually go through those rituals, go to the funeral, participate. You know, we watched 3 funerals online. One was my brother-in-law. And I just think now hard that was. And I do think, you know, don't ever diminish. It is so, so important. And also don't diminish other people's losses, because you may not experience it in the same way.
Mm.
Or that person or that pet wasn't as important to you. And I also think there's something really quite tricky about this notion of the stiff upper lip that we seem to, some people seem to hold on to. Because, I can see places and times where it's not appropriate that you share so much emotion, that you don't share your loss in the same way. But to hold this stuff in is a key message I think I've got to give today. It's so, so unhealthy. Yeah. It has to be expressed. It has to be talked about. It has to be felt openly alongside other people that you're safe with, that care for you, really.
And I keep coming back to that word with you, Tina, really, that emotional safety that you mentioned at the beginning. And by being able to speak openly about it in a caring environment, whether that's home, school, wherever we are, that emotional safety is so key from everything that really that you've mentioned. Yeah. I had a quick look at my watch, because when I'm really getting into the conversation, that means that it's probably going to overrun. So I better draw us back to just some final tips, or 3 tips, Tina, just to finish off the episode.
Yeah, I think one of my tips is that you really need to keep talking. You need to talk about the person. You need to honour their memory. You need to also tell the truth, because children know when you're lying. And you need to, I think as well, there's something about not being frightened to acknowledge that people, children in particular, will puddle jump. They may be grieving 1 minute, and then the next minute they will say to you, "Oh, we are still going to Centre Parks next week, aren't we?" And adults mustn't get scared of that. So it's about having this truthful, honest dialogue and acknowledging that there are some differences in how they experience grief. I think sharing memories and celebrating are vital. And, you know, sharing them together as well means that we create a place of emotional safety. And I think finally, don't stop showing affection. Don't stop giving that emotional safe space of security that I think children need, particularly when they are experiencing grief and loss.
Brilliant tips there. And so fantastic. So many rich ideas. And I've taken away a few things that are really helpful. So we really appreciate your time today, Tina, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.